From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our special guest on this edition of the program is Ambassador Sam Brownback. He's the U.S. Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, or IRF. And we're coming to you from his office at the U.S. Department of State here in Washington. In 1998, Congress overwhelmingly passed the International Religious Freedom Act that affirmed the importance of promoting international religious freedom as a key aspect of America's foreign policy. This law also created the position of IRF Ambassador at Large to lead the U.S. government's efforts, as well as an IRF office. The office monitors religious persecution and discrimination worldwide, recommends and implements policies in respective regions or countries, and develops programs to promote religious freedom. The Office of International Religious Freedom also publishes an annual report which describes the status of religious freedom in every country. It covers government policies violating religious beliefs and practices of groups, religious denominations and individuals, and U.S. policies to promote religious freedom around the world. The office also identifies countries of particular concern. These are nations guilty of particularly severe violations of religious freedom. On this edition of the program, we'll talk with Sam Brownback, who was appointed as Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom in February 2018, about the state of religious freedom, or lack thereof, around the world. Sam Brownback has a long and distinguished career in public service. Most recently, he was governor of the state of Kansas from 2011 to 2018. Previously, he served for 15 years as a U.S. senator. While a member of the Senate, he worked actively on the issue of religious freedom in multiple countries and was a key sponsor of the International Religious Freedom Act of 1998. Ambassador Brownback, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Pleasure to join you.
Well, thanks for hosting us right here at the State Department. Let's talk about the primary mission of the International Religious Freedom Office.
Well, the primary focus of it is to bring religious freedom to everybody, everywhere, all the time. We don't pick a faith or people with lack of faith. We just say this is a fundamental right. We believe it's a God-given right, that no government has the right to interfere with, that government should protect this right and not interfere with it. And that's the primary focus. The office was created roughly 20 years ago by Congress. I'm the fifth ambassador to serve in it. But this administration, this is a key topic. So it's gotten elevated a lot more. And we also think that if we can get this one right, you're going to have less terrorism, more economic growth, and your other basic human rights will flourish as well. That this is really a foundational and a key one for countries to get right.
And how does your background, very extensive background, you were a senator, a member of Congress, a governor, how does it prepare you for this work?
Almost perfectly, honestly. I was one of the original sponsors of the first bill. When I first went into the Senate, I started doing religious freedom advocacy work for individuals. I had a staff member the entire time I was in the Senate that was their job, was to advocate for people that were persecuted around the world. And you found yourself dealing with just the worst situations, but that if you could give a person a name instead of a number, in some foreign jail that's languishing, usually they were a religious minority, you could often keep them alive. You could sometimes get them free, and sometimes they would be out and immigrate to Europe or the United States. I run into some of them now as religious freedom advocates, or people that I helped get out of jail in other countries. But they have such a heart for it because it happened to them. And they know others that it's happening to, and they feel it's wrong and that they ought to help them out.
Can you give us some examples of these people?
Well, there's a gentleman here, I don't want to put his name out on this, but he was in jail in China, is out now, and is one of the lead religious freedom advocates here in Washington on what's taking place in China today. He experienced it himself personally. He has a passion for it, and he's now out trying to help other people not to have the same experience that he did of being sent to jail, left in jail, forgotten until somebody advocates for him. He wants people not to go to jail in the first place just for exercising their religious freedom.
I do want to get to China later in the program, because of the discrimination against Christians and also Muslims. But first, let's talk about the fact that religious freedom is really a bedrock value here in the United States. It's part of our First Amendment. It's very critical to our society and our government. We have separation of church and state, so to speak. How do you convey this value to other countries who perhaps don't share that same value and that same sense of separation between church and state, or mosque and state, as it may be? How is that received by other countries for which this is maybe not a commonly shared value?
You know, most nations guarantee religious freedom. In their constitution, most nations have signed on to the UN Charter of Human Rights that guaranteed religious freedom, the freedom to pick a religion, not to have a religion, to convert, to practice the faith peacefully any way that you choose. So that part's really not that hard to sell. Most people, yeah, I agree with you. But what you point out is the more difficult point for many people, because in many countries you have a dominant religion that then also dominates in the government space. And they have a preferential position, or they try to exclude other faiths, any number of things. And we just really work with the government saying, this is going to end up problematic for you sometime or another, and it may be problematic right now. It's going to hurt the diversity of your society, because people that come in that maybe have a different perspective, a different faith tradition, aren't going to feel free to practice. It'll be manipulated by politicians to gain political favor from the dominant class. And you're going to end up creating a whole series of problems for yourself. The government's role in this is to protect the right to religious freedom, full stop. It doesn't favor one faith or another faith. It just says this right is protected. And that's the safe space for government to be in, and that where you don't start creating a whole bunch of problems within your society or for yourself as a government, trying to determine, are we taking care of the right group and not helping the wrong group that'll be important in our society. I just was in a meeting with the Uzbek officials, and they're opening up some of their country more and more to religious freedom. They're off the country of particular concern list. There's still a special watch list, but they're saying, well, we have, you know, the dominant religion in our country is Islam, and we've just registered a couple churches, and the people are not sure they like this. And, you know, you're kind of going, well, we understand, because that's a normal. But you're going to keep from buying yourself a whole bunch of problems down the road if you just keep it open for everybody and protect everybody's religious freedom.
Well, that's an excellent point. And conversely, there are some countries who are, let's say they have a predominant religion, but they are very secular. And that, what we call laïcité, right, in French, or this fundamentalist secularism, also puts the lid on religious freedom to some extent.
It does. It's saying we're not going to protect people of religious belief to be able to practice. But for instance, I do a religious freedom roundtable weekly when I'm in Washington, and we have the American Humanist Association is a part of this. Now, they're very secularist, but they want their religious freedom protected too, to be able to not believe. And we're saying that to societies, that, you know, you're protecting religious freedom, which also protects the right not to believe, but you can't pick between one of the others. This is a full right in and of itself. It has to be fully protected as long as people practice in a way that doesn't harm other individuals. And that's the safe spot, and that's the best spot for governments to be in.
And as you said earlier, this is important to tamp down extremism, because when a particular religious denomination feels that it's being discriminated against or doesn't have the space to practice, then they will turn to violence oftentimes.
They will. We're working with a more secular government right now in a country that has a dominant religion. And we're telling them, if you don't let people practice their faith, they will fight you. They will figure a way. It may be subtle at first, but there will be people within that group that will be given more up to radicalization. And they're more susceptible to radicalization, because the person that's trying to radicalize them can go, look what how the government's treating you. They don't let you take your minor age children, if they're under age 18, to the mosque. What's with that? Why can't people go to a mosque freely if they want to? If a person wants to raise their children and let them and take them to the mosque, why can't they do that? You really lay the groundwork for radicalization of a broader cross-section of people that most governments look at and go, that's not what I want to do.
Exactly. Tunisia came to my mind, talking about a very secular state back in the 60s. They would try to repress the practice of Islam unless it was just a more, you know, secularized version. And I think that led to quite a bit of radicalization.
It's one of those things, it's a bit like playing tennis, I think, in a sense, where when you hit the ball, the return volley has the same energy that you put into it.
Mr. Ambassador, you referenced countries of particular concern, which is a category of countries where there's quite a bit of repression. Talk about those countries that most reach this category.
There are lists of the worst actors in the world. These are nations that really oppress faith, where it's very dangerous a lot of times for religious adherents or of a minority religion to practice their faith. And the government doesn't step in and protect the individuals. There are places where there's communal violence taking place, but the government's doing everything they can. But in some cases, it's a government that doesn't have the resources or it's too weak to really be more effective than they are. But these are a series of countries. China's in this group of countries of particular concern. We've got about 11 nations in that category. Some of them are authoritarian regimes. Tajikistan, Turkmenistan are ones that are just really doing a lot of control and not letting people openly practice their faith. In China, you've just got a broad war against people of faith. Pakistan just recently went on the list of countries of particular concern, and it was that the government really wasn't standing up to the people that were conducting all the persecution. It was a lot of communal violence, but the government itself wasn't stepping up, and itself was encouraging some of this by their blasphemy laws and other things.
We'll have more in just a moment, but first, you're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our special guest is Ambassador Sam Brownback. He's the U.S. Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom. And we're coming to you from his headquarters at the U.S. Department of State in Washington. I'm your host, Carol Castiel. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available on our website via iTunes at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Here's a shout out to a loyal listener, David Dauda from Mina, Nigeria. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to PCUSA@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Back to our special guest, Ambassador Sam Brownback. He's the U.S. Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom. Ambassador Brownback, before the break, we were talking about some of these countries of particular concern. What other tools do you have to pressure them or persuade them to try to change laws or open up countries like China, Pakistan, and we can also talk about Myanmar?
The CPC designation is the kind of the worst of the worst, and that also has sanctions that go with it, and those sanctions can be waived, and in some cases they are. Prior to getting on the CPC list, we have a special watch list, and that's to warn a country is that you're going really close to the edge, and you could likely be considered a country of particular concern, and that's a category where we try to work with countries not to go on the CPC list. Absent those two tools, what we try to do is to really engage countries on the positive sides of this, saying if you want to grow your country economically, if you want to have less terrorism, the way forward is religious freedom. While these are categories and they're designations that carry sanctions with them, we really prefer that countries would engage this in the sense that this is a way to grow. So one of the best examples, frankly, of this is the United Arab Emirates. Here's a small Middle East country. It has quite a bit of wealth, but it's also decided we want to grow, and we embrace religious freedom. And they invited the Pope, Pope Francis, to speak there for the first time a pope has ever spoken on the Arabian Peninsula in the history of mankind. He did that this year at their invitation in their Year of Tolerance. And their whole concept is, we can be a strong Islamic country and still welcome in others of other faith and let them practice and practice freely and protected by the government. And that doesn't assault our Islam. That just makes us more diverse and stronger as a nation. And then look at the dynamism in that nation, growing and lots of investment and people attracted to it from all over the world. And it's in the Middle East. So this is possible.
Indeed. And of course, I'd like to tell our listeners that I had the pleasure of meeting you at the UAE Embassy, that is the United Arab Emirates, during the month of May when there was an iftar dinner during Ramadan. And as you said, UAE is part of the Arab-Persian Gulf, not normally known for religious pluralism and tolerance, and yet we saw so much of that on display at that dinner. We had a speaker from the Catholic Church. There was a rabbi from a synagogue that is developing, and of course, an imam. Question to you, Mr. Ambassador, to what extent do you think this is unique to the UAE among the Arab-Persian Gulf countries? Do you see a similar trend in some other Gulf Arab states?
It's not unique, but they're certainly a forerunner. And I am seeing and observing other Middle Eastern nations watching and looking and saying, well, can you do that and be a strong Islamic population? So I think people are watching and seeing if this works. And it's obviously in all of our interests that it would work, so that you could see this sort of religious pluralism in action in a place in the world not known for it and seeing people thrive. Because we want the gates of religious freedom to fly open everywhere. We don't think this is just an American or a Western right. And we don't think it's good just for us. We think it's good for everybody and it's good for nations. So we promote and work with nations like that, but we'd also urge their neighbors in the region to observe that this does work. You can do this.
Another country that doesn't get a lot of publicity, except perhaps in the context of Iran, is Oman. I mean, Oman is also a very tolerant place, and it maybe doesn't advertise itself as much as the UAE, but there's quite a bit of tolerance and diversity in that Persian Gulf country.
And that's encouraging when it happens. And often we're talking about the negative models and what not to do, like this or that country, rather than the positive models, which we should talk of a lot more. One of the things we're going to be hosting later this year is in Morocco on a religious heritage sites. And I'm really excited about this program because there so many countries have religious heritage sites that are not of the dominant faith. In Pakistan, they've got these Sikh sites that are well known to the Sikh community, but the Muslim majority community in Pakistan is going, well, we're not so sure about this. But they are great heritage sites. They are great tourism sites. Sikhs from all over the world want to go to these places. And you know, we're saying to countries, well, restore and protect these religious heritage sites, and it's a good venue for tourism for you. And that's what the new prime minister in Pakistan has done. He's opened up avenues for more Sikhs to get in there. He's seeing it as a religious tourism site, embracing it, and we're going, please, more. And we hope to see more of that happen and highlighted at this Morocco meeting.
And when will that be?
The date's not set, but we've been working with the Moroccans on it and getting a lot of interest in this concept of these religious heritage sites and rebuilding them and restoring them.
That's fascinating. Of course, in Morocco, there's a very strong Jewish tradition, and the king has championed the diversity in Morocco. It's Hebraic culture, Muslim, and even Christian. It's really quite at the forefront.
What we're trying to do, though, is create just any avenue we can in for countries to see the value of religious pluralism and of protecting these sites, because often what you'll see take place, too, is when a majority religion ascends and there's a minority faith that's been there a long time and maybe it's declining, the sites will be degraded over time, they won't be taken care of, or even destroyed, which is a terrible loss, really, to the world's culture.
I think it's important to remind our listeners that people are often surprised when we talk about pluralism in predominantly Muslim countries. But the reality is, Muslim Arabs in medieval Spain were really at the forefront of religious freedom back in the what we call the Golden Age, between the 8th and the 15th centuries, when it was a caliphate and where relative tolerance reigned among the Abrahamic faiths.
This is not a strange notion to an Islamic world. It may be a notion of a past time, and they had a big growth of some of a more radicalized Islam that did not seek to have that tolerance. But I traveled any number of majority Muslim countries where the individuals say, well, you know, up until 20, 30 years ago, we were very tolerant. We lived side by side with different faiths. It was no big deal. And then somebody started a more radicalized notion going, and this can happen anywhere and does happen in many places. We're seeing the rise of anti-Semitism back in the West again, and we see it in the United States. We had the killing at the Pittsburgh mosque and the shooting in the synagogue. So this happens all over the world. But what we seek is that the government's response then must be fulsome and against it, saying, no, we do not tolerate this. We're going to prosecute the people that did this to the full extent of the law. We're going to provide extra protection wherever it's needed. And that you respond aggressively that this is not tolerated in this society.
Absolutely. That's extremely important. I'd like to talk about the upcoming Ministerial to Advance Religious Freedom that will be taking place here in Washington in the month of July. Talk about that ministerial and your outreach to civil society groups around the world. I assume they are very important to your mission that you maintain these contacts.
Well, the meeting will take place July 16th to 18th here at State Department. We have max capacity of 900 civil society religious freedom activists that can come the first 2 days of it, and that's really our engagement with civil society and religious leaders. The last day of it is a ministerial where we're inviting foreign ministers from over 100 countries to come to it and to engage on this full discussion and putting forward statements of what they're doing on religious freedom. Last year, we had 84 countries engage. I think we had 30 ministers, foreign ministers, or people at the ministerial level. And we anticipate more this year. This is really the global meeting on religious freedom. This is the one where people will come forward. And the United States is really pushing this topic. We're very excited about it. We hope to have coming out of it a series of concrete action items, more development aid focused on religious minorities and how to help them operate in their culture and society, more nations joining the chorus of pushing for religious freedom. Recently, we've seen the British step up more aggressively. Jeremy Hunt, the foreign minister, was citing a report about Christian persecution in the Middle East being at a dramatic level, near genocide level was their report. And then other reports that have been put out recently by the British on the Falun Gong and what's taken place, this charge over the years of organ harvesting, and a British panel, now it's not an official panel, but a high-level panel saying that organ harvesting was taking place, is taking place of the Falun Gong. And so we're really happy to see these additional voices strengthen their messages and put them out there aggressively to stand up for people that are persecuted wherever they are in the world.
And besides the British, do you have other strong counterparts overseas with whom the United States works to promote religious freedom?
I mentioned UAE, and they hosted a regional summit on textbook materials and having textbooks that don't persecute religious minorities and sow the seeds early on. The Taiwanese hosted a civil society forum. Mongolia has just recently appointed a religious freedom ambassador and wants to host a regional meeting of Buddhist majority countries on the topic of religious freedom. And the Europeans have all along been very strong and solid on this topic. I mentioned Morocco on the religious heritage side. So we're seeing more and more places push up around the world. And then some of the nations are starting religious freedom roundtables. Nigeria started one of these where Christians and Muslims and other people of different faiths coming together, standing for each other's religious freedom. So Muslims standing up for Christians to practice freely in their area, and Christians standing up for Muslims to practice freely.
And of course, West Africa is traditionally fairly tolerant. They have many Christian communities. It's just that this terrorism and radicalism is encroaching upon this tradition, and it's great to see that there's a resurgence of trying to get the balance back. I wanted to ask you, Mr. Ambassador, before we go, about some of the really difficult spots around the world. One could even call it state-sponsored persecution, such as we see in China vis-a-vis the Uyghurs, the Muslim community. The Uyghur Muslims are suffering at the hands of the predominantly Buddhist Chinese. And I'm not trying again to insinuate that Buddhists are more susceptible to this type of discrimination, but hundreds of thousands to millions of ethnic minority Muslims are being held in camps in Xinjiang, this vast region in northwest China. What is the U.S. doing with its partners to alleviate this discrimination?
Well, I wouldn't lay it on Buddhism in China. This is a atheistic communist government that's at war with all faiths. They're at war with Islam, with the Uyghurs. They're at war with Buddhism, with the Tibetan Buddhists. They're at war with the Christians. They're at war with Falun Gong. And it's a war they will not win. That's a very counterproductive thing of what China is doing, is that they're at war with faith, but they will not win this war. You will not subjugate faith. Faith will find a way to flourish, just like a plant grows up in a sidewalk. It will find a way to get moving on forward, and the freedom is what should be embraced of it. But currently, the Chinese government has over 1 million Uyghurs in labor camps in the western part of the country. They have destroyed any number of the house churches. The Tibetan Buddhism they've been putting down for years, and Falun Gong, they've had a particularly harsh attitude in criminalizing and imprisoning. And I told you about the one British report of even citing organ harvesting from Falun Gong practitioners. Part of what's also concerning about China is their new methods that they're bringing in place of oppression. It's cameras and artificial intelligence systems and blocking your ability to enter into the stream of commerce or to have an apartment if you go to the mosque and your face is seen, and taking DNA samples from everybody so they can track all of you. And it's this sort of big brother gone wild to oppress and suppress a religion. And then our concern is they're going to start selling the system to the rest of the world, to authoritarian regimes in other places that seek to put down a minority. And once the system is developed and all the software behind it, then it's a simple matter of people gathering and putting the data together, and then you can oppress people. I had a lady from the Holocaust Museum over a month ago, and she was talking about the oppression in the future may look a lot different than it did in the past, where there was a lot of people killed or imprisoned. In the future, you just may be marginalized in the society. And once they get your face and they associate you with going to church or a mosque or being religious, that they say you can't go into these apartments. You can't buy and sell in this place. You can't travel. Your kids can't go to school because the system has you. And they've got your face and your name, and you're not going to be allowed to participate. And that's probably the face of oppression moving forward in this era, which we don't want to see this happen.
The challenge is daunting because China, of course, is an important economic power in the world, and many countries perhaps are loath to impose sanctions on these human rights abuses for fear that, you know, that would jeopardize economic exchange.
It is, and we're seeing countries be hesitant, but it doesn't mean they don't recognize what's taking place. And people don't approve of this. There's a lot of secularization in a lot of different places of the world, but most of the world's religious. 80% of the world's people are religious adherents of some type. So they don't want to see an atheistic government in China developing systems and ways to put down people of religion and faith.
Well, thanks to the Office of International Religious Freedom, you're putting the spotlight on this egregious discrimination. One more before we leave, and that is, of course, Myanmar, their treatment of the Rohingya. I'm sure that's another major challenge for your office.
It is. Unfortunately, too, for Myanmar, this is not their first rodeo. They've been coming after the Rohingya and the Christians in the north, the Karen and Kachin, that are more dominantly Christian. They go after them, too, but they particularly go after the Muslim group. And I think the world just has to continue to scream about this and to push back. We've called it ethnic cleansing. And other places have called it stronger and had stronger terminology against it. But it should not happen. And we should be able to say in this world today, if you're a citizen of a country, you're an equal citizen. It doesn't matter what your religion is. And it shouldn't matter. And hopefully going forward, that will be the standard that will start to grab more in the world.
Ambassador Sam Brownback is the U.S. Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom. Ambassador Brownback, thank you so much for your time and for your terrific insights.
Happy to join you. Thank you.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Our engineer and producer was Gary Jaffe. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on The Voice of America.